Hi, this is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we're offering five conversations from episode 11, in which Michael Charlton joins Jorn, Louise, and me for a far-ranging conversation of recent studies and highlights. Plus, from the vault, a conversation from last year's EASL Congress wrap-up, offering some different thoughts about the role of MASH drugs as adjuvant therapies. Earlier in this episode, the panel discussed different prescribing models for MASH drugs, triggered by my question about whether MASH prescribing will resemble an oncology model. This conversation from the EASL Congress 2023 wrap-up takes a very different view of the relationship between MASH and oncology. It's a conversation between Jörn Schottenberg, Stephen Harrison, and me. The original episode has an excellent description, so I'll let it go from there. Hi, this is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. Today, we are offering four conversations from episode 32, our discussion with Stephen Harrison about what we learned at the EASL Congress 2023 and the American Diabetes Association scientific sessions about drug development. Plus, a vault episode addressing a similar topic after last year's ILC Congress, the one now known as the EASL Congress, also featuring Stephen and Jörn Schottenberg. This conversation starts with a discussion about the importance of treating early-stage cirrhosis patients. Jörn Schottenberg suggests that with new agents in place, we may soon be looking to treat other patient populations, HCC, for example, for which NASH drugs will become adjuvant therapy to improve treatment against the primary disease target. Stephen agrees, noting that we will need better tests to diagnose HCC, and when we can, there will be fewer presentations of advanced HCC because we will have treated more of them earlier with better agents and adjuvant therapies. Again, all this will await the approval of NASH and ideally cirrhosis drugs in the future. I ask how we will identify the 20 to 30% of HCC patients who develop cancer before NASH. Stephen suggests it depends largely on NIT development. From there, we move on to my final question, which is to ask what we did not discuss in the episode that the group considers important. Stephen replies with a new idiom. Jörn replies with a new concept. You'll have to listen to learn. Our entire key leader, opinion, and advocate team has been struck forcibly by how many studies provided significant advances in knowledge, and how some of these advances might change our underlying understanding of drugs, diagnostics, artificial intelligence, machine learning, how we think about the disease, let alone how we treat it once drugs are approved. It's quite a lot of digest and very exciting to consider, particularly an episode like this that talks about drugs that might come in the next couple of years. So sit back, listen, enjoy, learn. And when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. I had a conversation with somebody who's looking at NIT from an investment perspective, and they asked me, what's the fastest way to make money in NIT? And I said, anybody who could figure out how to not take F4 on CRN scale, but who could go pick off Charles Pugh or Ishak or something that could tell you who was early in the cirrhosis process, that would be hugely valuable, and to hepatologists, because everybody would know what to do if they had something to do. And it's reasonable to think we're going to have something to do.
Stephen Harrison.
We are definitely going to have something to do.
Yeah.
I'm very confident in that.
I just heard you say you're not going to retire for the next 10 years. That's good news for the field.
No, you didn't hear me say that.
Yeah. You heard me say that I was stopping doing the podcast in 3 years when I didn't exactly say that either. So he simply wants to make sure that we all stay in place for a while.
I think the younger bucks, the Jorns, the Mazins, the Naims, they're more than capable to continue the fight.
Yeah, I believe that's right. And I do believe, Stephen, that the breadth and depth of your field of vision for having been through as many of these wars as you have creates a certain level of knowledge where long after you think you've hung them up, people are still going to be calling you.
Well, I'm just very grateful to be able to contribute what I've been able to contribute and hope I can for a bit longer, and then sit back and watch Jörn do amazing things on top of what he's already done.
Jörn Schottenberg.
Let me spin that idea of the compensated cirrhotics a little further, Roger. I know we're approaching the last minutes of this talk. With the success of the therapies we're going to see, I think we'll soon be discussing expansion into populations we haven't so far studied. For example, patients with HCC. So if I have a NASH cirrhotic or even non-NASH cirrhotic and I want to treat his HCC, how do I stop the underlying disease as a disease driver? Which drug potentially resmetirome, am I going to use in an adjuvant concept to add to, let's say, chemotherapy or after TACE or something to modulate the outcome? I think the success we're building here will allow us to expand this into other patient populations and have anti-NASH drugs as adjuvants in patients that are really in need of disease modulation. That's totally speculative because we're never even thought about this yet. But I think, you know, there's good reason. If you decrease inflammation, everything, the patient might fear better.
Well, my friend Ken says all the time on the other podcast that we do that if you can achieve everything that you're thinking about, you haven't dreamed big enough, Jörn. So I love that thought. Oh, by the way, Stephen, he also says there aren't enough hepatologists prescribing enough
GLP-1s. So when he listens to this episode, he will stand up and cheer for you. Not that he doesn't all the time anyway.
It's something that we face every week in practice. But then a week later, I'm faced with, well, it wasn't approved. What do you want to do now? You know, that's the next the issue I have to deal with. So I think you're right. I mean, hepatocellular carcinoma is also a growing issue in this country, in your country, and around the world, largely, but not completely, due to fatty liver and it occurring outside the setting of a NASH cirrhotic phenotype. We need better tests than AFP and MRI to diagnose this at an early stage. And I think we're getting there. I mean, some of the epigenetic work being done in this field now is remarkable. And I think it's going to revolutionize the way that we diagnose HCC. But if we can treat the underlying drivers of HCC, just like we can treat the underlying drivers of NASH, I think we'll see a decrease in the number of people presenting with advanced hepatocellular carcinoma. And we can really impact overall morbidity and mortality relative to the disease. That's one of the things we'll begin to unpack once we get a drug approved. And once we get a drug approved for cirrhotics, that's a huge area of unmet need that's going to be studied intensively. Maybe it's studied by investigator-initiated grants, maybe more so than pharma-sponsored, but potentially both.
Okay, so I'm going to ask for one more wild area of speculation, Stephen, and then I'm going to note that we're going to do another episode on this topic of drug development that we've learned in the last month before Jorn goes to Italy and I go to the shore. And I want to make sure that whenever we do that, even if it isn't on a Monday afternoon, that we can get you back to be part of it. The area of wild speculation is this. If 20 to 30%, if I remember the number correctly, of HCC cases are now believed to precede cirrhosis, then how is the evaluation of that likely to come forth in clinical trials, those patients likely to come forth in clinical trials, given how we now think about who we're doing trials for?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to get better at our non-invasive tests for the disease. We can't do contrast-enhanced MRI or four-phase CT scans on all of our clinical trial patients that are F2-3. And we can't do that serially. It's cost prohibitive. So until we develop a better test than alpha fetal protein or even some of the more novel tests that are out there, we need something better. Then I think it's going to be a struggle to identify these people at an earlier stage. But to your point, it's something that we need to begin to take a serious look at. We're getting after this thing one step at a time, right? The first step is let's get a drug approved for the disease, and then we can begin to unpack all the nuances of the disease. And one of those important ones is hepatocellular carcinoma.
Excellent. So let's do this. Okay, just in closing, any one thing that happened on, you relearned on drug development in the month of June that we haven't touched on today that you think is worth putting a pin in so that when we come back to this issue, we're sure to cover it?
Well, one of the things I brought up at the meeting, and I'll leave this, I have to say it on the podcast because I like to come up with little idioms along the way. And so here's an acronym that I brought up and highlighted at the liver meeting in Vienna. And that is, we deal in a world where if you're not used to failure, you're just not going to advance science. Failure is part of what we do. It's part of Hep C. It's certainly been a part of NASH. And I have a slide I show of more than 10 drugs that have failed. And we're learning from that. So I'm going to leave you with what the acronym FAIL means. It means first attempt in learning. Okay. And with that, I will stop and let Jorn have his say.
That will resonate with me. I'm trying to think of a German acronym, and it doesn't quite turn out as nice, I think, but I'll follow up with that anyway. So this is great, Stephen. I mean, the one thing that maybe the month of June hasn't talked about, there's a lot of drugs that haven't been able to, or trials and programs that haven't reported data because they're actively enrolling. They're getting closer to complete their phase 3 trial, and I think those will raise a lot of excitement. We had novel MOAs. I remember Mazen Nureddin presenting a mitochondrial uncoupler at ASLD. There's always a certain area of quietness around these, but there is a lot of things in the pipeline. Now, spotlight was on Stephen and the resmetirome data, the FGFs, so a lot of data around that, but there's more to come. And I think, you know, also the genetic targets we've discussed briefly the other day, more targets to hit. Some failures, but for sure an attempt to learn and improve for the best of our patients. And I'm very happy to be part of that learning curve and looking forward to contribute.
So I've got two. First of all, you hear about these drug classes and then they just don't quite get there, right? Or they don't even get to the next stage. So it was nice to see the denifanstat presentation. Since I've been hearing about FASN inhibitors forever, and I'd never seen any data on them at all, and it was nice to see that this set of data pop up. I thought that was encouraging, number one. And number two, Stephen, I actually was fixing a balky screen door this weekend, which I for which I used WD-40, which immediately brought me back to one of the earlier Harrisonisms, which is what would happen if they stopped at 39.
Amen.
So I don't know where we are in the WD process, but my screen door doesn't squeak anymore, and it looks like we're getting closer to some good stuff. So with that, please join us again when we do the next round of drug development, and Jorn and I will be back next week.
We're not closing the door on drug development. We're just making it less squeaky.
That's fair. That's fair. And but then we also have to build a better screen so the gnats don't get through. There's a lot of work to be done here on the screen door for drug development. Totally agree.
And now, back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded the conversation or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're working on next week's topic, but it will be at least as good as this week's, maybe even better. Until then, stay safe, surf on. We'll see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.